Today on the Lord's Day edition of Renewing Your Mind.
Christians are called to be extraordinary models of civil obedience. We are called to be people who bend over backwards to be submissive to authorities that are over us.
Okay, you may be thinking, I agree with that, but what about when the government is corrupt? That's the rub, isn't it? Most of us are willing to accept authority when we agree with it, but there's something inside us that wants to push back when we don't agree. Today on Renewing Your Mind, Dr. R.C. Sproul returns to his study in the book of Romans to show us that submission is one of the highest duties of a Christian.
When Paul introduces this most important theme of civil government, as he does here in chapter 13, this theme follows immediately on what was just articulated at the end of chapter 12 with respect to questions of vengeance. Now, if I can recapitulate to bring your memories freshened from before, then I distinguished among three concepts that are very important because they are often confused in our thinking. One is the concept of justification, which has been the central theme of this epistle to the Roman Christians. That when the Bible speaks about justification, it speaks of that merciful act of God by which, on the basis of the merit of Christ and on the merit of Christ alone, he deems those who put their faith in Christ and depend upon his righteousness, God deems or counts those people as being just in his sight. There's also the concept of vindication that I mentioned before. And again, Jesus' parable of the unjust judge, sometimes called the parable of the importunate widow, who wanted to have her case tried in the civil court. The judge was one who had no fear of men or of God and was not the least bit concerned about executing justice and didn't want to be bothered with this poor woman's plea. But as you know, she persisted and pestered this judge until just simply to get rid of her, he heard her case. And Jesus gave this strong contrast between the unjust judge and the just judge of all of the earth, who is willing to hear the cries of his people. And the point of that parable, Jesus said, is will not then God vindicate his elect who cry unto him day and night? Vengeance is still something else. Vengeance is where payback occurs, where the scales of justice are set right, where an injury has been committed, then punishment for that crime is exacted at the court of justice. And we saw that what God says is that when we are injured, we are never to become vigilantes in searching out our own revenge. And nevertheless, we have to remember that God does not see vengeance as an inherent evil. Revenge is a legitimate enterprise when it was carried out or when it is carried out justly. And so God said, you are not to be agents of your own vengeance, but vengeance is mine. And then what does he say? I will repay. Now, all of these things then set us up for Paul's treatment of civil government, because not only does God keep for himself the prerogative of vengeance, but he also establishes an order in this world for justice to be carried out in his name and under his authority. And what we see throughout the text I've already read, that civil magistrate is not an afterthought that comes into being through the machinations of human invention, but civil government is an institution that is established by God and by God alone. And we'll explore that in a moment. But again, I remind you that God establishes the church and gives to the church a redemptive mission to fulfill, and he also establishes government as a ministry to the well-being of human beings in this world. We might call this a common grace ministry. The church is involved with the dispensing of those elements of special grace, that grace that has to do with our salvation, whereas the ministry of civil government ministers to the common well-being of the human race, not only to Christians or only for the church, but for all people. But both the church and the state are established by God and are governed by God. Well, let's go back now to the specifics of what the apostle enjoins to the Romans about earthly government. He says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. A couple of things about that. When Paul says, let every soul, he doesn't mean that we can distinguish now and divorce our souls from our bodies, and that the only kind of submission that we owe to the state is one that comes from within our heart. No, no, no. When he says, let every soul, the right translation for that would be, let every person. And he's addressing now the Christians, and he's saying, it is the duty of every Christian, indeed of every person, to be subject to the authorities. Now, we struggle with this, because one of the things that we kick against in our sinful corruption is to be accountable to authorities that are placed over us. Just think about all the different authorities that you've had to deal with in your life. You have the authority of your parents when you're growing up. When you went to school, you had the authority of your teachers and the principal. You have the authority of the police department as they patrol the highways. You have the authority of the dog catcher as you are regulated by how you treat your pets. You have the authority of state government. You have the authority of homeowners associations. You have the authority of the federal government, and so on and on it goes, with one tier after another of authorities to which we are called to be in subjection. Now, this call, the universal call to subjection to authority, touches the root of our corruption, as I said, because every one of us is a sinner, and every sin is an act of revolt against authority. If we respected the authority of God perfectly, dear ones, we would never sin. But when we sin, we refuse to be in subjection to the governing authority of God Himself. And God knows that about us. And if we're not willing to be subjected to God, how much more difficult is it for us to be subject to the police department and to the government of the state and of the nation and other authorities that rule over us? And so he begins this segment with this universal command. It is the duty of every Christian to be in subjection to the authorities. When we look at this from a theological perspective, we see that what we're talking about here is the principle of civil obedience. And the point that I would like to make throughout this chapter is this, that Christians are called to be extraordinary models of civil obedience. We are called to be people who bend over backwards to be submissive to authorities that are over us. Throughout redemptive history, we see the testimony of the great men and women of God who have shown us what it is to be models of civil obedience. I ask this question, for example, why was Jesus born in Bethlehem? Well, the quick and easy answer may be, well, because Micah prophesied in the Old Testament that he would be born in Bethlehem. And so obviously, in the providence of God and in redemptive history, God so moved things to work out that Jesus would arrive in Bethlehem prior to his birth to make sure that that would be the place of the birth to fulfill the scriptures. And certainly, God's providence was in view in that regard. But why else, from a human perspective, was Jesus born in Bethlehem? Well, we know the answer to that because we read it every year in the Christmas story, don't we? That in those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be enrolled when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And so everyone went to their own city to to enroll themselves for what end? So that they could be taxed by a conquering emperor, who now, without any regard for what it would cost the people to make an arduous journey back to the birthplaces to enroll for taxation, nevertheless gave the imperial decree that they do it. Now you can imagine a conversation like this going on in Nazareth. Joseph says, Mary, did you see the latest edict that came out of Rome? That crackpot emperor wants us all to go to our place of birth and enroll so that we can be taxed. How do you feel about making a trip to Bethlehem? Mary said, well, I suppose, Joseph, that if that's what the authorities require, then that's what we must do. Oh, come on, Mary, don't give me that, Joseph says. You remember what the angel said. You're pregnant now, and you're carrying in your womb the Messiah. Do you think we're going to jeopardize the whole salvation of our people by going on this arduous journey just to fulfill the whimsical decree of this crazy emperor over my dead body? We're staying here. Let him find us if he wants our tax. They made the journey. And Joseph risked the life of his wife. And she risked the life of the babe in her womb, that they may be obedient to the civil magistrate. That's the example of godliness. The second century apologist Justin Martyr, who gave his apologia to the emperor Antoninus Pius, in giving his defense of Christianity, argued that the emperor should examine the lives of the Christians to see that they, above all of the citizens of the empire, were the most scrupulous in the paying of their taxes and in their obedience to the civil magistrate. And so we have this strong motif throughout the New Testament to be obedient to the civil magistrate. And you say, well, wait a minute. Are we always supposed to obey the civil magistrate? No, no, no. Remember when the Sanhedrin said to the disciples in the book of Acts that they were to preach no more in the name of Jesus? And Peter said, shall we obey you or obey God? There are times when such a conflict arises where the civil magistrate commands or forbids something that is in direct conflict with the commandments of God, that not only may you disobey the civil magistrate, you must disobey the civil magistrate. We are always and everywhere to obey the authorities over us, our boss, our police, our governor, whatever that authority may be, unless that authority commands us to do something that God forbids, or forbids us from doing something that God commands. I don't know how many times I have women say to me, you know, I'm trying to be submissive to my husband, but my husband won't allow me to go to church. What should I do? I said, you go to church on Sunday morning. You disobey your husband because God commands you not to forsake the assembling together of the saints. And here's one case where not only may you disobey, but you must disobey. And then try to win him with your love and subjection the rest of the week. But in any case, there are times where we must disobey. If the civil magistrate calls us to sin, we have to say no. And the history of the world is replete with examples where exactly that is done by governments, where they command their citizens to do that which is evil. It can happen in any country, even our own. So again, the principle is easy. The application of it is difficult. The law is not this, that I may disobey the civil magistrate when I disagree with the civil magistrate, or I may disobey the authorities over me when the authorities over me are making me suffer or making my life inconvenient. No, no. One of the ironies of this master text of civil obedience is that it was written to the Romans, to Christians who were under the heavy hand of imperial Rome. And it was to that government that Paul called his people to be subject. And here he says something absolutely astonishing, but for which the theology of this ethic is grounded. For there is no authority except from God. There is no authority except from God. Ultimately, dear friends, the only one in all of reality who possesses intrinsic or inherent authority is God himself. And what is that authority? The authority that God possesses is the eternal right to impose obligations upon his creatures. God has the inherent authority to command our obedience and our submission to him. It is he who has made us and not we ourselves. His authority rests in his authorship and ownership of the entire world. And any other authority that we experience in this world is not intrinsic, but extrinsic. It is delegated from God. Again, Paul says, there is no authority except that which is established by God. Flip over to Peter's epistle, in which he, in many ways, sounds the same message as the Apostle Paul does when he says, submit yourselves to the authorities, that Christ might be honored. Well, how is my submission to the police department, to the state government, the housing development people? Well, how is Jesus honored by our submission even to corrupt authorities? How does that reflect upon the honor of Jesus? Well, beloved, you may not know it, but the universe is not structured as a democracy. It's a monarchy, indeed a theocracy. The government of the universe is God, and he has appointed his only begotten Son as the King of the kings and the Lord of the Lord. All authority on heaven and earth the Father has given to the Son. The President of the United States, at the end of his life, will have to stand before Jesus Christ and be held accountable for how he held his office. The Senate, the House of Representatives, all of those authorities will be answerable to the King of Kings as to how they executed justice in their labors. The King of England, Chairman of China, every earthly government will be held accountable to the King of the Kings, because all authority on heaven and earth has been given to Jesus. And you often overlook the fact that at the heart of the biblical message is a political message, a kingdom, where the supreme political authority is now vested in Jesus Christ, who owns every square inch of real estate on this planet. Now, when we disobey lesser authorities, we are disobeying authorities whose authority rests on Christ and is delegated from him and through him. The President of the United States cannot exercise his office for 5 minutes apart from the will of the King of Kings. It is the God of providence who raises kingdoms up and who brings kingdoms down. And every king in the history of the world rules only by the providential will of God himself. It's God who casts the final ballot in every election. You look at some of the results of elections and you say, how in the world could God have voted this way? Maybe it was to judge us, because he does that. As I say, he brings kingdoms down as well as bringing them up. There is no authority except from God. And the authorities that exist, again, another way of translating this, is the powers that be. Not the ones that ought to be. But here's the radical statement that the apostle gives. The powers that be are appointed by God. Every authority in this world is established in the final analysis not by referendum, not by democratic vote, but by the single appointment by the supreme ruler of heaven and earth. Every authority is appointed by God. And what Paul is saying is, it's God who appointed the Roman authorities. I wonder if Paul ever rued the day he wrote these words, when his life was ended by the sword, the vicious and unjust execution of Nero. I think that when Paul put his head on the block, probably the last thought that went through his mind was, the powers that be are appointed by God. Here's my head, Nero. Do with it what you will. That's radical stuff, folks. But can we look past those authorities and see the authority that stands behind it, see the authority that governs over it? That's why Jesus can say, will not God vindicate his elect who cry unto him day and night? Will not God set the scales of justice right when we are victimized by unjust, demonic governments that in themselves do everything but work for the glory and honor of Christ? You don't think God notices that? You don't think that Christ notices that? Our Lord will vindicate his people who seek to be faithful to him despite the injustice that comes our way from earthly authorities. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. And those who resist will bring judgment upon themselves. That's a sober warning, isn't it? That if we resist those authorities whom God has appointed, we may be regarded as heroes by the people around us, but we can only expect the visitation of God's judgment on us. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. Now, this is a proverbial point of wisdom. It's true in the main. It's not true absolutely. Nobody ever did more good in the Roman Empire than the Apostle Paul. He did not, in the final analysis, receive praise from the civil magistrate. Instead, he received his death sentence from them. But in the main, even in corrupt governments around the world, in the worst of governments, that those who receive the most harsh treatment are those who we would call criminals, people who are involved in the worst forms of corruption, that the whole point of civil government is to restrain evil, to use force to restrain evil. A couple of words about this. The comment you hear all the time, you can't legislate morality. Every time there's an ethical issue that comes up for political discussion, whether it be abortion, euthanasia, or whatever, we hear this cry from every corner, you can't legislate morality. Two things I want to say about that. On the one hand, if what is meant by the comment you can't legislate morality is simply that you can't change people's behavior just by changing the law, there's some truth to that. But that's not normally the way in which it is articulated. It is usually meant to mean that the government has no place passing laws that have to do with moral matters. And I say, okay, if we can't legislate morality, what can we legislate? The state bird? And even that has ecological and ethical ramifications. Which birds are protected, especially by state law? Think about the laws of the land and how many of them are moral. Is it as a moral issue whether or not you rob banks? Is it a moral issue whether or not you commit first-degree murder? Of course. That's exactly what legislation is about. It is about restraining evil. And what Paul is saying in simple terms is that maybe the government that we're dealing with is corrupt to the point that it drives us crazy, but the worst government is better than anarchy when evil goes without any restraint whatsoever. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Again, civil magistrates are ordained of God. They are God's ministers, and they are called upon to serve God's good pleasure. Now, the apostle says, but if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. Now that statement in Romans 13 is one of the most controversial statements that Paul ever wrote. When he talks about the power of the sword that God gives to the civil magistrate. That subject is so laden with important content that I've elected to wait until our next session to explore that. Not only in light of what the apostle says here in Romans, but where the power of the sword was instituted by God in the first place and for what purpose that power of the sword was visited on this planet. And God willing, we'll look at that in our next session.
That's a challenging message, isn't it? And it's vital that we heed the Apostle Paul's exhortation to be submissive to those in authority over us. Never has there been a time in our history's nation when biblical values have been criticized, even rejected, and we need to be prepared to respond in a biblical way. Thanks for listening to Renewing Your Mind on this Sunday. I'm Lee Webb, and the topic today shows us one of the profound benefits of verse-by-verse teaching. Over the past several weeks, Dr. R.C. Sproul has taken us through the important lessons in Romans chapter 12 And now, as we hit this difficult subject in chapter 13, we're able to see the full context of Paul's teaching. We have placed all 59 sermons from this Romans series onto a single USB drive, and we'd like to send it to you for your donation of any amount. Our offices are closed, of course, today, but you can still make your request online when you go to renewingyourmind.org. And let me also encourage you to take advantage of the many resources that are available on our free app. Download it on your mobile device, and you'll have access to audio and video resources, along with articles, blog posts, and ebooks. Just search for Ligonier in your app store, and Ligonier is spelled L-I-G-O-N-I-E-R. Well, as Dr. Sproul mentioned, he will return to this topic next Sunday, and he'll help us understand what Paul meant when he said that the government bears the sword for a reason. So we hope you'll join us next Sunday here for Renewing Your Mind.